All right. Welcome, everybody, to Chad Watch. I'm Chris Silva. We got Kyle Miller over here. Say what's up, Kyle.
What's up?
Awesome. And we're going to have a great show today. We got Brandon McQueen in. Everybody that's been trapping since 2012 definitely knows your name, man, as far as the case. And thanks very much for agreeing to come on the show and talk to us. I guess we'll just do a little bit of setup just to kind of introduce you from our end. I've known about you, man, since I started really paying attention to cannabis and like that movement. And definitely the court case that you're associated with is been a big part of like what was going on for me in the Lansing industry, like right after that. And there's just a lot of ramifications about it. And I thought it would be an interesting perspective for people who listen to our podcast. Many of them work in the industry, but maybe haven't been around since the caregiver story days, just for them to kind of see some context. So I definitely wanted to talk about that. And also your experience in the Mount Pleasant area for their new adult use ordinance and just kind of like the rollouts on that and kind of what you see is the most like nefarious angles of it. Cause there's a lot of things in my opinion, rotten in how that system was rolled out. And I just think I've always thought you'd be a pretty interesting, unique perspective on the show. And I've really enjoyed over the last few years chatting with you on Facebook and just kind of your perspective on current events and stuff. Like I've always thought you're a really interesting, intelligent guy. And I just appreciate you coming on the show, man. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself and kind of set up and then we'll just kind of roll in there.
I appreciate it, Chris. Yeah, my name is Brandon McQueen. And like you just mentioned, kind of, I always have an opinion on current events, political or otherwise. I've paid attention to politics for a long time, some reason, since I was a teenager, which also I started smoking cannabis when I was a teenager. And so the two kind of combined back in 2008. I was going through my daily news articles I read, and I saw an article about a group coming to Michigan to pass the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act. And so I reached, and that was, 2008. And so I reached out and helped collect signatures on that. And so that was kind of where I first stepped into the whole community industry.
Excellent, man. It's great to have you on today. As a CMU alumni, I was there from 2008 to 2013. Definitely frequented Compassionate's Apothecary, as well as PK Herbs in town, if anybody remembers that from Mount Pleasant back in the good old days. So yeah, man, it's great to have you and hear your story.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome. So I guess to start, man, you've already kind of you've already painted the picture a little bit, right? So it's Michigan, you know, the Medical Marijuana Act passes. And it seems like I actually kind of forgot Kyle was a CMU alumni. So he actually has a really good insight on this. Can you guys kind of paint the picture for me on like, so, you know, what it was like then, like what those caregiver stores, like what that was like and just kind of what that community was like, and then kind of just rolling that into the events that would be, you know, the McQueen case, and kind of just kind of talk about that. And I'm just interested to hear that. I wasn't involved as much, and I definitely wasn't in the Mount Pleasant area as often during that time, so this will actually be new for me as well.
Yeah, so because of collecting signatures and being in touch with that group who was collecting signatures, I think they were called the Coalition for a Safer Michigan. I started to develop, you know, like my first professional network in my life, because, you know, I'm only 22, 23 at this time. And so I met people like Brad Forrester. And so after we collected the signatures and it passed, the kind of next stage that came through the pipeline was people getting together and building these community groups, where there was a big emphasis on making sure there was no genetics being traded or anything, but it was a new industry, a new program, and no one knew how to get involved. And so having this group in each local community where people who had questions could come, ask their questions and network. And so I headed that. And so we had the Mount Pleasant Compassion Club was, must have been early 2009 that that started. And our first meeting, no one showed up. It was just me and Brad. But I got to pick his brain, and he kind of just helped me understand what was going on. And then the next meeting, like 45 people showed up. And then it just kind of happened over and over again. And yeah, I started building a community and a network of people in our local area outside of the internet. But on the internet, I saw people start to open up dispensaries down in like the Ypsilanti, Ann Arbor area. And that just kind of motivated me. And so I sat down every morning for I don't know how many days and kind of just studied the Medical Marijuana Act over and over and over again. Well, if it says that this is what medical use is, I can do this here and do that here. And after days and days of studying it and coming to the conclusion that we can move forward, I wrote a business plan and like my legal understanding of the law and sent it to the city commission and the city sheriff or county sheriff and said that, hey, here's what we're about to do. And unless you tell us not to, we're going to move forward. And then I didn't hear from anyone. So we opened up our first dispensary, May 1st, 2010, Compassionate Apothecary, which was for me, you know, it was just an adventure. And it was fun. And I think PK Herbs probably opened up about 3 to 6 months after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about the right timeline. I remember being in my first apartment over in Tallgrass on Broomfield, and I had a buddy named Trevor that I believe worked at CA for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and so he came over and told me about how he had got this job and how let me backtrack for a minute. If you remember when you applied for a medical marijuana card back then, it literally took like 6 or 7 months to get that baby in the mail. Like You had just paperwork to validify you for like, you know, the first 6 months that you had a card. So I knew a lot of people that had their cards, but like were still in that stuck in this paper purgatory kind of thing.
Right.
Where, you know, the rules were so like vague back then that you wanted to make sure that you had like the real physical card to,
right,
to be a customer. And so through a friend, I had got some smoke through there. And then like a couple days later, literally my card finally came. And I remember checking it out. It was kind of what I expected, but at the same time, it was like my first experience with any kind of cannabis retail. So the fact that it existed still and that there were people starting these home grows and stuff as like 20-something, it was mind-blowing, man. It was life-changing.
Well, and so you mentioned, you know, how the caregiver dispensaries kind of worked. I didn't know what I was doing. I just know that I was moving forward. And so you know, my calculations and our interpretation of the Medical Marijuana Act was that patient-to-patient transfers were legal. And so I built the model off from that. Not having any type of experience in retail, I now kind of realize that what I did was just unknowingly create, you know, kind of a modified, what's it called? Conscription or no? When you consignment, so we essentially did like a consignment of shop. My understanding is you take a t-shirt in there and you're like, hey, I want, you know, $15 for this, but they sell it for whatever they can and take the difference. But so what we did was through that compassion club, I had met tons and tons of caregivers in the area and got to know them on a level where I had their personal numbers and stuff. So I was also a caregiver myself, and so was my business partner. And I think we had four strains that we were growing. And I don't remember his name anymore, but, you know, he plays a big role in my memory of it all, because he was the first caregiver who I really had no attachment to other than just met him, who was like, all right, let's go ahead and do this. And so he put in three strains. So we opened up our shop with seven different strains. And then the way we did it is, you know, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. So the numbers just kind of pulled them out of my head and moved forward and see if it worked. We just agreed that no matter what it was sold at, we were taking 20%. And so we actually let the caregivers decide the price, which I believe was one of the most beautiful parts of the whole system. And so that's where it started. It started with seven strains in a little building. I had like five friends who agreed to work without pay for the first month. And, you know, cause I literally started with $2,000 cash. And then my business partner, maxed out his credit cards at like $1,850. So it was less than $4,000 that we started all of this. And so that first month of June, enough money came in to start paying people in July or in May to start paying people in June. And then it just kind of took off from there. And then in the heyday of it, it was, we had 60 strains or more on the shelf. And so,
that is awesome.
And then, but then on top of it is it was its own little market. Right inside our display room was its own little, you know, micro example of free markets. So like I said, we let the caregivers pick the price. So a caregiver would come into our room, you know, they'd study all the different strains up on the shelf, see what price they're at. And they'd be like, all right, so my stuff is definitely better than that stuff that's $12 a gram. So I'm going to put it at 13, or I think it's worth 14, but I also don't want it to be in here real long. I'd like to come pick up my cash in here in like 2 or 3 days. So I'm going to decide to do 13. And then people would call me up like, how is it going? Huh? Someone came in and put a strain in, and they kind of are beating your prices and your stuff hasn't sold. What? Are you serious? All right. Well, drop 2 grams. I need that money. We need to get that out of here. And you know, there wasn't like apps. There wasn't phone apps and stuff at the time. So like,
Right. They
had to just kind of call in and check. But if I could recreate that system, you know, like, there'd be like, you could send out notifications. Hey, you know, none of your stuff is sold today. You might want to check your price or check, you know, I don't know. It was fun, you know, walking in there, 60 different strains constantly. And then there's the people who, well, I'm putting mine at $23 a gram because no one can grow better than me. And then it's like, yeah, okay, buddy. But then the thing is, it'd work. Someone would come in there and be like, what? $23 a gram? That stuff must be the best ever. I'd be like, mm-hmm.
Good. College kids with their parents' money.
And so, yeah, man, that was 15 months of that. So from May 2010, and then we won the circuit court case. So we got to stay open at first, but the appeals court.
So how did the circuit court case and all that come about? What happened on 14 and a half months where all of a sudden things are changing?
So it actually started month two. The process started month two. So you know, I had just got elected to the Mount Pleasant Board of Education in 2009. So I've been on the board now for like 5 months when we opened the dispensary. So, you know, part of me is like, you know, part of me is shoving this down people's throat because, you know, being on the school board gave me some sort of protection. Like, they had to treat me like an equal member of the community. Right. And, you know, I didn't fully realize how it was playing out at the time, but it did. And so either way, I was doing my best to be as respectful and doing everything by the book. We forced everyone to have their cards, even though it was kind of bullshit and it made people have to go without for months, but we just wanted to take those extra precautions. We started collecting sales. We paid for a professional opinion from some hotshot Grand Rapids tax lawyer who got a professional opinion from the Michigan State Treasury that's you know, I'm sure people will tell you about because it pissed off some people because, you know, medicine shouldn't be taxed. But at the time, we're like, if we shove tax money into their hand, they're going to, it's going to be quicker that they accept all of this. So we started collecting the 6% sales tax right away, pretty close to right away, because we were trying to do everything above the board. Like I said in the beginning, I sent the letters to the city and to the sheriff saying, hey, you know, we're going forward. We're not trying to be malicious. And after being open for about 2 or 3 weeks, a disgruntled customer decided they were going to open their own dispensary, which is like, okay, cool. And they call themselves the Three Amigos, and their flyer was advertising that they got regs on the reg. And they started posting these flyers all around downtown, you know. And so there's like whispers and rumors because we're not advertising. So there's most people don't know exactly where the dispensary is at or even if it's really there. But, you know, the people who know, know. And so there's like whispers and rumors. And then now all suddenly there's these flyers going up all around downtown. And it was a little game at first. I walked around downtown pulling them down and then they go put them back up. And finally, I'm like, look, I can't let people confuse us. We are not the same entity. I am trying to do this in the most respectful way possible. I'm not putting flyers on the corner of Sacred Heart. And so I went to the Morning Sun. And I'm like, hey, we opened a dispensary. You guys want to do an article on it? They were like, yeah, definitely. And then sure enough, cops showed up about a week later with a cease and desist letter denied by the circuit judge. And then I opened in May. We went to trial in August. So was that like 5 months, 4 months? So it happened that fast. And then I think the ruling came out in December, if I remember right. And then the appeals court heard the case either that spring or early June. And then they ruled in August. And that's when we had to shut down.
Damn. What a wild ride that had to be though, man. You're a pirate, man. You're a pioneer.
It was an adventure, definitely. I remember when we won our circuit court case, I was standing in the office of, I don't know if she was the mayor, Carol Woods from Lansing. Does that sound right?
Oh, yeah. We know, like, Carol Wood.
Yeah, dog. Fuck Carol Wood.
Yeah. So I just remember we were there doing some kind of lobbying, trying to give her our perspective of why all this stuff was going on. And all of a sudden, a reporter called me while I was in the office with her. I'm like, hey, I don't know this number. It might be really important. Matt Taylor, my partner, he kept on talking with her. I took the call and the reporter's like, hey, did you guys, how's it feel to know that you won? She's like, what are we talking? And then also she told me that it just came down that we won the circuit court. And that was pretty cool. I had already opened another location in Traverse City, only the city up there was being assholes about it. And I had just sat down with them maybe the week before. It was like five of them all on one side of the table with just little old me. And they wanted me to explain to them why we can do what we can do. And so I pretty much went through it step by step. And at the end of it, they're like, we just don't agree. So, no, we think we're probably going to shut down the dispensaries that open. And then, like I said, a week later that I got that notification. I went and printed off the ruling and drove up to Traverse City that day and went right into the city office. Here's a copy for you. Here's a copy for you. Here's a copy for you. It was only a circuit court ruling, but, you know, it gave, you know, some leverage.
Some validity to what you were saying, for sure.
And then Traverse City ended up never really shutting them down, even when the appeals court ruled against me. I always took it as, since I was the one that went to court, that the appeals court or the Supreme Court eventually was talking to me. And so I felt like if I kept my dispensary in Traverse City open, then 10 years later, when this was all said and done and I applied for a license with the state, they were going to use it against me. So when the appeals court told us we had to shut down Mount Pleasant, we shut down Lansing or Traverse City, and I gave up my stake in Lansing. I owned like 5% of, there was a CA Lansing where last dispensary that was there was called Kind, I believe, K-I-N-D on mm-hmm. Michigan. I don't know if they're still yeah. there or what it is, but so we started that dispensary as a CA of Lansing, but I gave up my shares on that too, just because I didn't want it to be used against me when I actually applied for the license.
No, that's a funny, the small world thing. I actually worked for a few years for the guys that ran Kind afterwards. And that's actually how I got my start in like the industry side is they brought me on as their, which is laughable now, but like their political consultant, you know, their political consultant. It was the best gig I've ever had. You know, I just go hang out upstairs and smoke weed and end up buying and selling.
Talk about Ralph Nader.
Yeah, talk about Ralph Nader, just sell weed, smoke weed, sell, you know, just like once in a while, I would show up to like troll Carol Wood and shit. Cause like that was anyways, but that's a small world. And also like that kind of a good segue from there to the other thing I really wanted to get your input on is so this ruling happens, and most of the stores that were operating in cities like Lansing and Traverse City, like you alluded to, never really shut them down. A lot of these municipalities were like, well, shit, you know, we don't necessarily like in Lansing, no one was trying to shut shit down except Carol Wood, you know? And so like, a lot of them shut down voluntarily though, after that, that was like mm-hmm. the great first shutdown. Mm-hmm. And then people started opening back up. And then there was the whole edibles and concentrate thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, at that time, 2009, 2010, the economy is very much in the toilet at that time. Cities like Lansing decided to turn and look the other way because truthfully, at the end of the day, it came down to either as a landlord, I'm going to get my money every month for this commercial building from these weed guys, mm-hmm. or literally nobody's going to rent it. Mm-hmm. And then in turn, the city's not going to get their property tax. And so they kind of just let it happen, knowing that, especially for commercial properties, it was worth it. It was worth looking the other way for them to kind of bitch about it in a roundabout way, but without ever really addressing it.
You're on mute, Chris.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, they did. It was fucked up though, because they didn't actually like offer you much protection from, you know, legal intervention right. though. And that was yeah, like the exactly. nuts thing. So like I was working in the Lansing stores when concentrates and edibles were illegal. So like, it wouldn't be on their menus and shit. Like you had to be like, oh no, I'm here for like the edibles. And they'd have to like, make sure you weren't a cop. And like, you know what I mean? Like, and it was just like super nuts. Or like in Lansing, there'd be days when like the, you know, like it was just, even with 90 stores, it was still a small community, right? Like somebody would hear a rumor that it was like raid day or some shit, or like, or even like when other cities would get raided and stuff, like all the stores would just shut down for the day. And just like, it was just like constant, like state of fear and shit, you know, like, and that was like the caregiver stores for right up until the emergency rules stuff. And for people also kind of really new to the industry, there was this period of time when the industry was transitioning from what we're describing as like the most free market Wild West, like probably the best pro for patients and for access, probably mm-hmm. the best it has ever been and will ever be for patients. It goes from that to this, and there's this interim period where the state said, hey, if your municipality has an ordinance and allows it, we'll let these guys transition from what they're doing now to the legal system. And they created a process for it, but basically people were selling dope to dispensaries, and then legally these guys were able to stockpile it and then start selling it on the license system. And this was like, anyway, so we're just rehashing it. So this is kind of like getting us to closer to now. And so Mount Pleasant obviously has a tolerance for cannabis at this time. Right. And so like they're doing their ordinance, and for point of clarity, I guess like my understanding is in the adult use ordinance now that's laid out is the people that have the licenses, it would be two looms in a jars. Is that correct? How it is in Mount Pleasant right now?
Yes. They have the rec, okay, and then there's two more that have medicals. So there's five altogether. So right around, I think the time you're describing, 2014, at least, I ran for my second time for, seat on the school board, and me and a group got together using the Home City Rules Act and passed a local ordinance legalizing it, not decriminalizing it, like straight up legalizing it, but pretty much everybody just took the opinion that that was symbolic. But like you said, you know, it shows that there was a tolerance for it. We passed it overwhelmingly. If I remember, it was 61%, something like that. And so I think that, you know, kind of turns a page. And then 2017 is when the city decides to officially take some action and get something on their books besides what I did. Actually, now that I remember, here's what happened. So in January 2017, the state had announced that cities need to make up their ordinances if they want this and stuff. I went to the city and was like, look, I have proof that I know how to pass local ballot ordinances. I would like it if you guys took the lead on passing a local ordinance, but if not, I'll go ahead and collect signatures and do it again myself. And they're like, no, we got it. And so they started out seemingly going through a process of good faith, democratic, you know, civic duty. They created an ad hoc committee. It was seven people. There were three from three citizens. I was one of them. And then there were two from the city commission and two from the planning commission. And we met twice a month, at least once a month, sometimes twice, from I believe it was April or May until the end of July or August. And just there as advisory was a city zoning guy and the police chief. Safety director and the city's personal lawyer, the lawyer for the city. So they didn't have any vote, but they were there at every meeting, giving their opinions and trying to direct things the way they wanted. And it became really clear that the police officer was putting on pressure to try to get the ad hoc committee to come up with a conservative ordinance. And I've been on the school board for, you know, 6 years at this time. So I'm very much familiar with boards and Robert's rules and how people go about putting this pressure on and stuff. So part of me just wanted to fight back and just, you know, present the most liberal version. But I felt like in the long run, having the credibility of saying that we tried to do this in good faith, we negotiated, we compromised, would have more weight. And so, I knew a lot about all of it, and the police officer knew a lot about all of it, but obviously that was from opposite ends. And then everybody else on the ad hoc committee kind of had to get brought up to speed. One of the other citizens was I'm probably going to get it wrong and I feel bad, but she has some kind of mental health degree. And then the other guy worked with kids and youth. He was an expert with kids and youth in the community. And like I said, then there was the two city commissioners and the two planning commissioners. And so most of the debate ended up being on how many they should be and where they should be, where they should be zoned. Because right off the bat, only the police, even the police officer right off the bat, took the position that, you know, these are coming, so let's do it, you know. But he was trying to make the most conservative version he could. And we ended up, in my opinion, even though I think there was some shady stuff done to try to get a more conservative ordinance, we came to a good compromise. We gave them most of the zoning they wanted, but we didn't want foot restrictions away from anything but schools. Was the only type of proximity restriction. And then we were going to do more. It was like 3-3 on if it should be let the market decide how many will exist, or a number, you know, somewhere like 10. And so we ended up agreeing with 10. And, you know, like I said, it was back and forth. No one was yelling at each other. Somebody would have a belief that they thought was really strong, you know, they had a strong opinion on something, but they would let the other person kind of talk them back. And then on the very last day, when it was time to vote, the vice president of the city commission was appointed to the ad hoc committee. And part that I take personal, I will always point out that he was at the time one of the chairs of the local Democratic Party, voted no on the ordinance. And I've been on the school board. You don't just show up and surprise the rest of your board members with a no vote. Like, that's sneaky and it's rude and it's just totally against expected behavior. But it still passed 6-0 or 6-1. And then it got passed on to the planning commission and they voted on it 7-0. It passed unanimously. And so then it went to the city commission, and that's where the police officer, in my opinion, I don't know if I could prove this, had the most leverage and influence. And he influenced the city commissioners who had all the ones that had just got elected had told me they supported marijuana and making an ordinance. And he talked them into scrapping the ordinance the ad hoc committee came up with, and they just started completely anew and made their own. And that's the one that got passed that resulted in only 3 medical dispensaries at first. Which the only one, and I don't know, Kyle, I think you were maybe here still around that time, or at least had some insight. Those 3 medical dispensary licenses, I don't think anyone ever opened up with them besides Cassano's.
I'm pretty sure it was just Cassano.
And Pure Option got one. Pure Options must have got one and bought one, I think. I think they bought in. It was Old 27 or something like that.
Old 27 Wellness or whatever, yep.
So one of the medical licenses that were given out in that first process, as far as I know, never even came to be. And then we had the 2 medical shops. And then I, in 2019, tried to pass the recreational ballot. I got language from Jeff Hank, who's always treated me really well, and I've always really enjoyed him and his opinion and stuff. But I think he was a little pissed off at the people in his community that he was working with. And so he had a pretty harsh section in there that took like all power away from the commission to make any changes in any way without like 2 years of effort and work. And I went through and edited the language he gave me. But that's probably why you should have more than one person go through and read something and edit it, because somehow I either missed that section or it didn't click what it was really saying. And so the city and the parties and like the establishment of my community were able to use that clause to come out against it, and they defeated it. So we lost that one. But it also put a fire under them to make their own, which was the second huge mistake. They made another poor law, this one in regards to recreational, that made it so the 2 that had medical didn't get a recreational one, and Loom got 2, and I missed out. I came in 4th place.
Yeah, that's fucking sucks. How was there a point system in place? I imagine there was a point system in place, right? And
for the medical one, I'm pretty sure it was just a pure lottery. And one local got lucky and just happened to get it, and that was Cassano's. And for the recreational one, they went with the point system. And I don't know. I wasn't involved with those discussions at that time, so I don't know what convinced them.
So, you know, we're going to do an episode about this, but like Loom's one of the shittier companies on this kind of stuff. So they have like a lot of money for this kind of outreach, like the municipal application part, you know, and like they're really, really good at like, there's an entire fucking industry of I call them chads without money, you know, like just people that are like pencil pushers and shit. I was a pencil pusher, you know what I mean? Like I would help people get applications, but like there's these people out there that are highly specialized and like can go in and like they can look at the rubric and be like, here's how you get all the points. And then if they don't give you the points, here's my legal team that, you know, beats the shit out of the city on these 7 points. And then we get them, you know, so like, and Loom is like notorious for that. We could do like a whole, you know, real estate application, you know, episode about that. So I feel like that's a lot of what probably went on there, because it seems insane that they would get 2 out of the 3, you know, like that's nuts.
Yeah. And the fact that I mean, it feels good a little bit. There are quite a few people in the community who, you know, reached out to me and were like, you know, this feels like it was corrupt. You really should have had one. And I appreciate that. But I think it was even clear to more people that Cassano's already having a medical license, and our Ampere option too, already having a medical license, that leaving them out of a recreational license, you know, was
outrageous.
It just doesn't make sense.
Stacking the deck against them completely.
I remember getting on a Zoom meeting when they were having conversations about that, and saying to like Will Joseph, for example, their mayor, like that guy was 13 years old when all this started. You know what I mean? Like he's what, like 23 years old now as the mayor of Mount Pleasant. And so those guys just don't understand how deeply rooted you're into this industry and just how insane they are.
Yeah. So, you know, there's no one knows the truth. I know that a lot of people around here that I have nothing to do with went right to calling corruption. Someone got paid off, or the city was being threatened and they folded to the threats. You know, I don't know where you go to document and find out if that's the truth, but it came from a completely different network of people that I'm involved with. So it lends some credibility to me. My feeling is I took it personal, right? So I'm a little jaded over the whole situation, but from my perspective, here's my perspective. As a kid, Democrats seemed to be more likely to be for marijuana legalization, or at least decriminalization, and Republicans were the hard ass, you know, you're going to prison for the rest of your life if you get caught with a joint in Texas type thing. And rather how accurate that really was or not, that was definitely the perspective growing up.
The perception of it, for sure.
And then the medical marijuana law starts to, you know, come about, and it's clear in our state legislature and the federal legislature that it was almost always party line. Republicans were completely against it. And then there was like the 10% of Democrats who were for it, but the rest of the Democrats were against it. But that changed a lot over once it became medical. And so from my perspective, what happened is the Republican Party, we divided them, and all of a sudden the capitalists and the conservatives couldn't get along anymore. And the profit motive made the capitalists and the Republican Party go, hey, you guys, sorry, we're not fighting this anymore. We want the money. So in my mind, it was a fight against mostly Republicans, the party trying to legalize it. And then it became a fight against Republican capitalists trying to capitalize the market, monopolize the market. And it always felt like Democrats were the only ones really trying to help the people, at least here in Michigan. And so we finally pass the recreational law at the state level. And I help get, I mean, and I'm not saying I helped that much, but I put out a little endorsement. Hey, to the medical marijuana community, you want to support these commissioners. And then it comes down time for them to pass this ordinance, and they all decide to go with pretty much verbatim the ordinance that the safety officer wants. And so it feels to me like it was a group of old school Democrats who have built a local machine, who actually is able to get power and they wanted the power more than anything, and they didn't want to piss off this very small minority group, but powerful minority group that is the police officers and some of the super conservatives. So it feels like it was a calculated decision of, hey, we're going to give them weed, so in the long run, they're going to forgive us, but let's go ahead and make it the most conservative laws we can. That way we don't, that way we make friends. And because Will Joseph was on the ad hoc committee. He was actually a city, he was actually on the planning commission, and he was one of the planning commissioners appointed to the ad hoc committee. And he voted yes. He was one of the six who voted yes. And then his planning commission voted unanimously. And then he got elected to the commission. And all of a sudden, there was this pressure from, my opinion, the ranking Democrats on the board, and he folded. And so he ended up voting against against what he voted for and helped create originally. And then, yeah, all of a sudden that kind of old guard, this last election, they lost all their people. And sure enough, like 2 weeks ago, they had a special meeting for this and voted to get rid of any caps, which, you know, it's the right thing to do. That's cool. Doesn't help me. doesn't help rectify any of the losses that I incurred because of their rules that they passed.
So realistically, how many stores do you think Mount Pleasant will end up with?
You know, that's a great question. I reached out to the people. So I negotiated 9% of dispensary with the Nature's Medicine people. And they were the ones that I applied with. I don't know much about them, but I negotiated 9% with absolutely nothing. All I had was my reputation. They were looking for a local in Mount Pleasant. Someone recommended me. The offer started at like 1%. I'm like, you're not just using my name for 1%. That'd be more embarrassing than actually worth it. And so I'm like, what about 10? Like 10% triggers extra paperwork. Would you be good with
that? You'll be on the license at that point. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, cool. And so with no money, no property, nothing to my name, I negotiated that 9% onto that license. And then we got fourth place. So I reached out to them. They haven't responded. But then I started thinking about it. Why would they? Anyone who applies gets a license now.
Yeah. You know what though, man, like, it's obviously super fucked up that you didn't get that obviously. And that Loom has two of them. That's insane. But like something to keep in mind, man, like is the market is like, it's still getting mature, and these fucking chads cannot do what you need to do to be successful. Like your pricing strategy that you laid out earlier in the show, I was thinking about it. And if you're running so for example, the store that I was working at and running at Farmhouse, we had a similar model, except we took more money. Like we would be like, you know, we're just going to do the double up. You know what I mean? Like you sell it to us for 12, we sell it for 24. That's so basically they also got to set their price, and we would be cool about it. The only thing we would do is like discount it from time to time, which no one gives a shit about. They're happy because we're getting sell through. So what you described is like, in my opinion, like the tenets of like, you know, running a good retail. But these chads can't do that shit because they have so much money and capital out and shit, and their cost and they're so high and stuff that they have to have these artificially high prices. And when you couple that with like just a fundamental misunderstanding of our culture and the market, like these chads are getting like run out. Like great example is the people at Redbud Roots. Like they sold their Muskegon location. Probably all of them are on the block because they can't run a retail store because they don't know about this shit. So there's probably like a lot of opportunities in the future for someone like you who knows about this shit, who can step in and either, you know, save somebody a sinking ship or, you know, just kind of take something, you know what I'm saying, man? Like the time for people like us is like, is super, it's good. Cause the bills are starting to come due. You know what I mean? Like all of these, all of, like, you know, Brad and Chad's institutional money friends, you know, Thaddeus, he needs his fucking money, you know, and he needs it at like the huge at the huge returns that they were talking about. And
yeah,
it's hard to sell a $60
$4,000 pounds.
Yeah, dog, that's what these people, like, real, that was their real business plans and shit when they were presenting it to these people. So, like, they're I believe the tides are turning, man, you know.
Yeah, and that's kind of where, you know, like the Red Bud situation, you know, I think maybe I, you know, vaguely read something about that. That's where I've not paid attention to the industry and what's going on very much anymore. So, and like I said, not out of like spite or shunning it, even though sometimes if I want to, but mostly just because I'm in a totally different industry. I teach martial arts to somewhere close to 100 students in my community. And it gives me an opportunity to work with kids that come from, you know, come from the bottom. I came from a single mother, had me in high school, grew up in poverty, low-income housing and stuff. So being able to kind of come from that situation and now being in a position to be able to help kids who come from that situation, I'm pretty, you know, excited about going in headfirst and seeing where this goes.
That's excellent, man.
That's what happens. That's awesome, dude.
That's super awesome, man. That's a, yeah, it's a bummer it all worked out like that, but I still think, man, like, as long as there's an industry and this culture and stuff, bro, there'll always be a place for you there, you know, like there'll always be like an opportunity there for you. I really think as it starts to mature out, you know, like, not just because, like, it's, in my opinion, owed for you for what you've done to get us to this point. You also really, like, super lowballed your involvement on legalization too. You're like, yeah, I did a little bit, but no, you were like super, super big. And like, that's definitely how I first, like, started, like, interacting with you, is like you taking on like a very active role in that movement in your community. So, man, I, just super, super grateful and just thank you for doing all that, man.
I appreciate that, man. It means a lot.
Likewise, man. I agree with him 100%. That time period in my life is, you know, that's the beginning of what I am today. You know, those
right.
First stores and those first experiences, honestly. So
yeah, right. You should write the book, man. You should write the history of the caregiver days and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be super. And I also want someone to do that because I think it'd be super interesting. And we're starting to get like further away from that period of time, and I'm just afraid that we're starting.
It needs to be documented now before
it's too late. Especially, you know, everybody involved smokes so much weed.
Well, and there's a lot of patients and stuff who were really important for certain testimonies in Lansing, for example. Many of them who were really sick, and you know, we already have lost some of them, you know. So the time to do that would be now, I think. The sooner the better.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this has been a really great one, man. Thank you for coming on. This was a really, really interesting episode.
Killer stuff.
Yeah, before we roll out, I want to just do a couple quick announcements, and then I'll let both of you guys kind of say a couple last words. Any shameless plugs or anything you want to announce? But I'm just trying to get people to go to neverremediated.com. It's a joint venture that a bunch of people that we fuck with are doing, and it talks about just kind of flower remediation and CRC and what that means and what you should be looking out for. And just kind of, if that's something you care about, this is something where I think you can go and learn about that. Yeah, just want to put a plug out for that. Thanks everybody for tuning in. I think this has been a really good one, and, yeah, I'll turn it over to you, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by today, Brandon. It's been a real pleasure. I think that the industry does have a place for you somewhere. You're going to land on your feet when the time is right. And hopefully that's with a retail location in Mount Pleasant, but who knows, man. But good luck, man. And thanks for everything that you've done in this industry. We all appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And right back at you guys, you know, thank you for doing guys are doing, because you know, sometimes I feel a little weary wording it this way because I am not trying to take any type of like stolen valor or anything, but it really did kind of feel like a war for 10 years, and you know, and you can only do so many tours before you just are tired.
Yeah.
Broke down, and
I bet.
And then someone has to continue it on though. And so that's why, you know, I appreciate, you know, you guys and everybody else who stepped up and continued it on.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. Thank you so much, man. We really, really appreciated having you on the show. And thanks so much, everybody, for watching Chad Watch.
Appreciate it.